So, hold on. No shouting now. But I would love to come to Alaska.
President Obama addresses tribal representatives from Alaska and across the nation. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Thursday, the 5th of November. Good evening. I'm Ellen Lockyer. Also tonight, the federal government drops its case against the Marshall Protest fishermen.
It just seemed like very poor judgment on the part of Fish and Wildlife.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by Primera Blue Cross Blue Shield of Alaska. Primera believes the first job of a health plan is to support good health. More information available at primera.com.
President Barack Obama and top members of his cabinet welcomed hundreds of leaders from Alaska Native and Native American tribes to Washington today. The president called the Tribal Nations Conference the largest and most widely attended gathering between the federal government and tribal leaders in history. Clinkett Elder Clarence Johnson delivered the invocation in the packed Interior Department auditorium right before President Obama took the stage.
Great Heavenly Father, we are standing in front of you. With gratitude, that this President Barack Obama has invited us together.
The gathered leaders cheered and whooped when the president appeared. President Obama acknowledged America's past, broken promises, and violated treaties, and thanked the leaders for making a leap of faith and attending today's conference.
I want to be clear about this. Today's summit is not lip service. We're not going to go through the motions and pay tribute to one another and then furl up the flags and go our separate ways. Today's sessions are part of a lasting conversation that's crucial to our shared future.
The president said despite President Clinton's executive order establishing regular and meaningful consultation with tribes, that has not happened. So President Obama signed a presidential memorandum giving every cabinet agency 90 days to come up with a plan to implement and improve consultation.
So even though our experiences are different, I understand what it means to be on the outside looking in. I know what it means to feel ignored and forgotten, and what it means to struggle. So you will not be forgotten as long as I'm in this White House.
The president took comments from the audience, and the first to call out was an Alaskan who asked when he would come to the state. The president said he'd like to visit in the summer. As APRN's Libby Casey reports, Alaskans had a chance to share their concerns with the president and his top staff, and now we'll be watching to see what happens next.
One of the few people to speak directly to President Obama was Bill Martin, president of the Tlingit and Haida Indian tribes. He asked for Obama's support on a number of issues, including subsistence rights, basic road and plumbing infrastructure, and suicide prevention.
Suicide is a very high rate in Alaska. It's for all of Alaska, it's twice the national average. For natives, it's five times the average. And for young men between 15 and 27, it's 12 times the national average, and it's a serious issue, and we hope that we can be able to provide more funding to combat suicide.
Martin also pointed out that the U.S. has overseas programs that nurture small businesses in developing countries and said that model could be used at home for Alaska Natives and Native Americans. After President Obama left the auditorium, other Alaskans had a chance to raise issues with cabinet members in fields like energy, education, and environmental protection. Inupiat leader George Edwardson brought up concerns about offshore drilling and told Interior Secretary Ken Salazar he's worried about its impact on marine mammals and salmon.
And you and I have a very, very serious problem. And
we got to talk about it then.
And that problem is everybody sitting in here eats salmon.
Edwardson fears drilling could hurt salmon runs, Native people, and all of America, for that matter. Salazar responded to another question about oil and gas development by promising Alaska Natives are being heard.
We are in the process of moving forward with a plan for the Outer Continental Shelf, and well, I can't guarantee you what the outcome will be. What I can guarantee you is that we will take into account the best of science and also the input that we are getting from tribal nations who have spoken up and whose concerns I am very aware of.
Other comments and panel discussions touched on justice issues, health, and education. Repeatedly, cabinet members said, "We are aware of the problems you face." Health and Human Services Secretary Kathleen Sebelius pledged to do a better job delivering health care.
We're aware of the big gaps in services, the huge gap in funding, the disparities, which are shocking. And what HHS has done in the past is do a pretty good job of printing reports. What they haven't done very well is closing any of the gaps. And it's something that I take very seriously, and I know Dr. Rubidoux does.
Dr. Yvette Rubidoux is the first ever female Native American director of Indian Health Services. The Obama officials repeatedly pointed to her appointment and that of other Native Americans to high-level posts as a foundation for trust. The biggest takeaway for many Alaska Native leaders present was having a seat at the table. Margaret Hansen, chairperson of the Native Village of Kotzebue, says they want to finally play a role as policy is being made.
It means that we're going to have to work harder as Native leaders to push them to do what we need them to do to keep that dialogue going. So it's time more than ever. So I'm looking forward to doing that.
Not every issue had time for airing. The Small Business Administration's program that helps Alaska Native corporations get government contracts came up only briefly. And Peter Captain Sr., vice president of Tanana Chiefs Conference and member of the new Lotto Tribal Council, says he has another pressing concern.
I was hoping that they would have touched more on climate change. It's something that's dear to my heart and also the other Alaskans. We're ground zero for climate change, though.
But everyone present could fill out cards with their top issues, questions, and feedback, and the organizers pledged to take them very seriously. In the end, Peter Captain summed up what the day meant for him.
I think it is the greatest thing that ever happened to Native America, really, because we've been waiting for this for so long, you know, to have something like this happen, you know, all the all the fallbacks we had with former administrations and everything. I think we're on a path now to setting things right.
Alaska Native leaders from Nulato to Barrow to Juneau say they're now ready for the next step to see how the president and his cabinet put their pledges into action. In Washington, I'm Libby Casey.
The United States Interior Department is dropping charges against the lone Marshall protest fisherman who was sighted this fall. Jason Isaac of Marshall was charged by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service after he admitted to investigators that he fished for king salmon in the Yukon River during a closed period. Shane Iverson of member station KYUK in Bethel reports.
Isaac was one of about 20 fishers that protested the unprecedented subsistence fishing restrictions on the lower Yukon. But now the tribal administrator in Marshall, Nick Andrews, says that the feds are no longer pursuing the charges against him. Andrews says the tribe received a letter from the Office of the Solicitor under the U.S. Department of the Interior.
And the letter stated that United States will be dismissing the violation notice effective immediately.
Andrew says that residents in the lower Yukon village are pleased that Isaac, who is the only law enforcement officer in the village, is no longer up against the charges.
Well, people in Marshall are happy. We've got closure.
A call to the Office of the Solicitors was not returned, but Andrew is crediting attorney Heather Kendall Miller for her behind-the-scenes efforts to have the case dismissed. Kendall Miller is an attorney with the Native American Rights Fund in Anchorage. She says she followed the story through news reports and got involved when Isaac was charged.
It just seemed like very poor judgment on the part of Fish and Wildlife.
During the illegal fishery, Marshall fishers caught about 100 kings and distributed them to the neediest members of the community. Many elders said the only kings they received this year came from those drifts. Kendall Miller met with Fish and Wildlife Regional Director Jeff Haskett and urged him to push for the charges to be dropped.
Mr. Haskett agreed that circumstances suggested that they reconsider the citation.
Tribal Administrator Nick Andrews says the protest has been a resounding victory for the tribe and other subsistence users throughout the state.
Our intention was to get the attention of the Palin administration. We also wanted to address the federal and state fishery managers and shed light onto the powerful pollock high seas industry. And that was achieved. And this opened doors for more dialogue into the subsistence debate.
Since the protest, the Alaska House Resources Committee held a hearing in Bethel where salmon management was a major topic, and the Department of the Interior has announced plans for a sweeping review of federal subsistence management practices. Reporting in Bethel, I'm Shane Iverson.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a Fairbanks facility that provides a refuge for street kids.
There's people to talk to, there's things to do, there's always food. It's a warm place to be and it's safe.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Wells Fargo, providing Alaskans steps to help reach their financial goals. Wells Fargo Bank, NA. And by Alaska Communication Systems, converging voice, video, internet, and data applications for business with data transfer speeds up to Gig E. ACS, connecting Alaska companies to each other and the rest of the world.
State health officials have redirected 130 doses of H1N1 vaccine to the remote island village of Little Diomede. A medical team also was sent today to the Western Alaska Island to treat additional people with suspected H1N1 flu infection and to help prevent further transmission. Health officials say two residents were flown to Nome after exhibiting symptoms. One has tested positive in an initial rapid test. The town's mayor, Andrew Milligrock, requested that a medical team and medication be sent to treat an increasing number of residents with flu-like symptoms. The 130 residents of Little Diomede have been without regular air passenger service for 4 months since a weekly helicopter flight stopped. Meanwhile, state health officials have been fielding calls from concerned Alaskans demanding to know why H1N1 vaccine is not yet more widely available, as well as questioning how decisions are made about the distribution of the vaccine. State Division of Health Immunization Program Manager Laurel Wood says each day state health officials check with the CDC website to see how much vaccine is available and how much Alaska will be allowed to request.
We immediately place that order to get the vaccine on its way to the state. And before it gets here, we are working out plans to be sure that the vaccine can be turned around quickly and distributed throughout the state.
Wood says the supply problem stems from a vaccine manufacturing process that has taken much longer than companies had originally thought it would.
It just simply did not grow at the manufacturing facilities as quickly as it hoped. So the yield that they got during their processes was lower than their original estimates. And so there will be plenty of vaccine. It just is coming out more slowly.
Wood says it currently takes about 6 months to complete the process of manufacturing a vaccine, and the first H1N1 source was not isolated until last April. She says distribution to high-risk patients is figured out based on population. For example, if 100 doses arrive, an area with 5% of the population would get 5 doses. She says state officials are working hard to coordinate with other health agencies to get the vaccine out to rural Alaska. Jack Crow is the vice president for health services for the Yukon-Kuskokwim Health Corporation in Bethel. YHKC serves more than 50 villages in a 75,000-square-mile area. Crow says they were hoping to have more vaccine in October, but are still making progress in getting rural Alaskans vaccinated.
To date, we've received about 2,000 H1N1 doses, and we're vaccinating employees and high-risk patients. Some of that in Bethel, lots of that in our 43 village clinics and 5 sub-regional clinics. We do have enough vaccine as of Tuesday to hold a mass dispensing exercise here in Bethel, and we're going to continue that the week of November 9th through the 22nd. So we got about 2,000 to date and are expecting more this week.
Crow says the mass dispense will be available to the general public and not just high-risk patients. He says hub areas get the vaccine first, so places like Bethel are ahead of the villages, but not by much. Laurel Wood says so far 43,000 doses of H1N1 vaccine have been distributed in Alaska, but at least 300,000 to 350,000 Alaskans will want to be vaccinated. The U.S. Census Bureau is gearing up for the 2010 count of the nation's population. Alaska traditionally has the lowest rate of response to the mail-in census survey, so this year there's a renewed effort to promote the forms. KMXT's Casey Kelly reports.
10 years ago, just 55% of Alaska households filled out the census form, compared to the national average of 65%. Eric Morrison works for the Census Bureau, explaining the process to communities around the state. From his office in Juneau, Morrison covers all of Southeast, as well as Dillingham and Kodiak. He also oversees efforts in the Northwest, Arctic, Interior, and Glen Allen regions. The greater the written response, the less direct counting the Census Bureau has to do. So Morrison says there's a big focus this year on getting people to fill out those forms.
We come a minimum of three times to each and every household if they haven't returned their questionnaire. And if you don't like to be bothered and, you know, you're watching Dancing with the Stars and you got somebody knocking on your door. So I encourage everybody to, once they get that questionnaire, mail it in and you'll never hear from the census person.
Last census, one in six households got a longer questionnaire asking for detailed socioeconomic data. This time, every resident will get a shorter form. The more detailed information will be collected annually through statistical samples taken during the Census's American Community Survey. Morrison says even in some of the more remote parts of Alaska, they'll be pushing the mail-in forms.
We'll be doing update leave, which means that we'll be taking a questionnaire and leaving it on the doorknobs and giving them an ample opportunity to return them by mail.
Morrison's also helping communities set up what are called complete count committees, groups of volunteers who will help the census get accurate data. He says it can involve anyone from local elected officials to tribal leaders to social workers who work with traditionally undercounted populations like the homeless.
Everybody that breathes and eats and wants to become involved with the census will basically work with them in order to ensure a better count than we've had in the past.
The state of Alaska is also out there promoting the census. Department of Labor and Workforce Development research analyst Ingrid Zaruba says the state is forming its own complete count committee.
The idea being that each resident is counted where they live, and to make sure that people who do not get their census forms at their home address, that they make sure that they do get a census questionnaire and that they return it.
While the Census Bureau concentrates on the more remote parts of Alaska, Zaruba says the state will be promoting the census in urban areas. They're expecting to find people who primarily live in small Alaska Native villages but spend at least part of the year in larger cities. Zaruba says the census requires a home address.
They may get a form in Anchorage, and if they were to fill it out, they should fill it out with their resident being in their residency based on the village or the community that they are from.
The census typically starts earlier in Alaska than the lower 48. Census workers will start door-to-door counts in the Northwest and Arctic regions in January. Written census forms should start arriving in mailboxes in February and March. In Juneau, I'm Casey Kelly.
With November temperatures in the 40s, full sun, and no snow in Anchorage, it seemed an appropriate day for representatives of Alaska businesses to call for action on climate change. Pat Lavin, an attorney with the National Wildlife Federation, led a contingent of business owners to the offices of Senators Lisa Murkowski and Mark Begich in Anchorage today as part of a Clean Energy Works campaign to promote climate change and energy legislation at the federal level.
So our work includes outreach to the business community, and today's event is the delivery of a letter signed by over 100 Alaska businesses to our senators, encouraging them to support climate and energy legislation that's working its way through Congress right now.
Members of the group, calling itself the Alaska Businesses for Climate Action, represented building, tourism, and alternative energy trades. Kurt Garut owns Susitna Energy Company in Anchorage.
Customers that we see just need a little bit more education, and they realize they too can use alternative energy. Alternative energy works very well. You just need to be efficient.
The letter asks Alaska's senators to support well-designed climate legislation that generates investment in energy efficiency and renewable energy development, resulting in reduced dependence on fossil fuels. Kevin Sweeney is Senator Murkowski's state director.
This letter will go directly to our expert legislative staff in the D.C. office and then also to the Energy Committee, of which Senator Murkowski is the ranking member of the Energy Committee.
Suzanne Fleek, Senator Begich's state director, said businesses have a voice in climate change debate.
You know, there's going to be both economic impacts because of climate change, but also economic opportunities in terms of transitioning to a more efficient energy economy here in the state. So we definitely welcome that new voice into this debate.
Fleek says the letter is on its way to Begich's Washington, D.C. office. Federal climate change legislation is working its way through the U.S. Senate.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by the Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, operating and maintaining the Trans-Alaska Pipeline, and by Tech Alaska, operators of the Red Dog Mine in Northwest Alaska, delivering jobs and revenues to Alaska for 20 years and now working on the next 20 years. Online at reddogalaska.com.
The state says a Fairbanks sewer and water utility owes its customers another $1.2 million in refunds. The Regulatory Commission of Alaska ruled that Golden Heart and College Utilities customers are due the money because interim rates charged over the last 2 years were too high. The rate case is one of three involving the utility that could total over $12 million in customer refunds. They're all on appeal. The latest ruling regards a rate increase the utility asked for in 2007. The proposed hike was allowed to go into effect until the RCA ruled. Kristen Winters, director of regulatory affairs for the utility's parent company, Fairbanks Sewer and Water, says the state's decision does not take into account that increasingly conservation-minded consumers are buying less water.
When you have declining consumption, there is no way for the utility to collect enough money through their rates to meet the expenses that the utility has.
Winters says the slow system through which water and sewer utilities can adjust rates has added to the utility's problems. State Assistant Attorney General Daniel Patrick O'Tierney says the RCA only considers rates relative to costs, not fluctuating consumer demands.
If it didn't deliver a certain amount of product, then it doesn't collect a certain amount of revenue, and essentially that's a wash. I mean, utilities aren't guaranteed a certain return. They're guaranteed an opportunity to collect their costs and earn a return, but they're not guaranteed it.
O'Tierney says the utility has filed a petition for reconsideration but is required to produce a refund plan by November 9th. No refunds will be issued to customers until all appeals are exhausted, but if all the rulings are eventually upheld, individual customers could be due hundreds of dollars each. A candlelight vigil for homeless youth is being held in Fairbanks tonight. The event is aimed at putting a face on national statistics that show 40% of homeless are under 18 years of age. As KUAC's Dan Bross reports, the sponsor organization, Fairbanks Counseling and Adoption Center's Street Outreach and Advocacy Program, has had success helping homeless kids.
The Street Outreach Program works with between 10 and 30 homeless youth in Fairbanks every week. The kids have ended up on the street due to trouble with family, substance abuse, and outright abandonment. Rachel Behe says she was 15, had moved through numerous foster homes, was out of school, and feeling lonely when she connected with the outreach program.
It really helped me find friends and just hold a job down because it was very difficult to keep a job. Like, I love to work, but it was hard because, you know, I really didn't have anybody to hang out with. And so once I got friends and everything, it was easy to. I was a lot more motivated to be out with people and to work and just live life.
4 years later, Behe has her GED, is holding down a full-time job, giving back to the Street Outreach Program, and is respected by other teens for getting her life together. She says the Outreach Program offers tools that can help homeless teens move toward stability.
They can help you apply for jobs. They can take you to get your state ID, apply for food stamps, food boxes. If you need a ride to a job interview, They can arrange a ride for you. You can also get bus tokens from them to get around town.
The outreach program recently received a 3-year federal grant that's enabled it to open a downtown Fairbanks drop-in center. Statistics show that 42% of homeless youth will be physically abused and 13% sexually abused, while 57% don't get a meal every day. Bee says the facility provides a refuge for street kids.
There's people to talk to. There's things to do. There's always food. It's a warm place to be, and it's safe.
Bee says she'll attend and possibly speak at tonight's candlelight vigil. Local officials are also expected for the Walk for Homeless Youth, which runs from the Golden Heart Plaza to the Street Outreach Drop-In Center on 7th Avenue. That's tonight, starting at 6:30. It's being held in partnership with the Covenant House Alaska, an organization that provides support for homeless youth statewide. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
Young fishermen from across Alaska will gather next month in Anchorage for a summit intended to give them the skills, tools, and information necessary to become professional fishermen. KDLG student reporter Sam Wright has the story.
The 2009 Alaskan Young Fishermen Summit is being sponsored by the Alaska Sea Grant Marine Advisory Program. Sunny Rice is a Marine Advisory Program agent in Petersburg, and she's in charge of organizing the upcoming summit. She says the summit has two main purposes.
One is sort of a reaction to, I think, the realization that it's perhaps getting more complicated and difficult for young people to get into the fisheries. And the second is to allow young new fishermen a chance to network with each other and people with, you know, more experience so that they can just learn about things that they need for their own fishery, but also think about things on a statewide scale. So it's networking and then sort of basic education.
The upcoming summit will be the third such summit. The other two that were held in 2007 featured over 130 young fishermen. Rice says the event is called the Alaskan Young Fishermen's Summit, but that name can be slightly misleading.
Maybe new to the fishing business is better than saying young. Maybe New Fishermen Summit would be better, although we've called it Young Fishermen Summit for a few years now, so we'll stick with that.
The Alaska Young Fishermen Summit will include two keynote speakers. Al Birch is the executive director of the Alaska Whitefish Trawlers Association, which represents around 40 vessels that fish out of Kodiak. Linda Bankin is the executive director of the Alaska Longline Fishermen's Association. In Dillingham, I'm KDLG student reporter Sam Wright.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at aprn.org. We had reports tonight from Shane Iverson in Bethel, Casey Kelly in Juneau, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, and Sam Wright in Dillingham. APRN's Libby Casey reported from Washington, D.C., and Lori Townsend from Anchorage. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineers are Gooseberry Peter and Dave Waldron. I'm Ellen Lockyer.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by Doyon Limited, Interior Alaska's regional native corporation, providing oil field services, government contracting, and natural resource development in Alaska and across the nation. Information at doyon.com. And by Primera Blue Cross Blue Shield of Alaska. Primera believes the first job of a health plan is to support good health. More information available at primera.com. Find qualified Alaskans to fill your company's job vacancies at Alexis, the state of Alaska's virtual career center. Alexis has hundreds of workers for you to browse through, and you can specify details about required levels of experience and other qualifications. Learn more at alexsys.alaska.gov or visit any Alaska job center. This message is sponsored by the Alaska Department of Labor and Workforce Development.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.